Welcome to the third episode of the Edge Riders podcast. Today, we're talking to Pablo Velasco, who's an assistant professor.
That's right. Yes. Hi.
At Aarhus University.
Yes.
And you have a history, at least with your PhD, on researching blockchain.
Yes.
And currently, what's your focus?
I still research blockchain to some degree because that's what I'm known for.
Yes.
Like in the academic world. But I'm also interested in decentralized web in general and automation processes also in general, like especially creative automation processes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we haven't had this conversation yet in private, but I look forward to having that one too. About the decentralized web. But to start off, I'm really curious about what journey brought you to wanting to study blockchain from the beginning.
Okay.
And was it a was there a societal perspective to it?
Yes, that's my approach always.
Yes.
Like politics and social elements of technology, in this case blockchain. Well, perhaps what I should say, like the first thing is that I started studying in my very early years electrical engineering. Because I was very much into computers, technology, and that kind of stuff. I was building my own computers when I was a teenager. And I started that career. And then at some point, I started reading philosophy.
Yeah.
I started reading Nietzsche.
Yeah.
And I was still kind of
young. Which one? Just for the...
It was the posthume writings.
Yeah.
So like a bunch of separate, non-order writings. And I got really engaged with that. So I left.
What ideas got you engaged with that?
I think it was more the type of questionings, because in electrical engineering you will have very static ways to think, right, about the world.
Yeah.
And it was more pragmatic, more utilitarian. And these were questions about existence and why are we here, and questions about power, for example, right? So at some point that became more interesting for me to pursue to some degree.
Mm.
So I applied to a philosophy place in another university and I got accepted. So I made that jump.
Mm-hmm.
So technology always stayed like subterranean to some degree to my further background.
Yeah.
And then later, when I finished my master, I was still in philosophy, very metaphysic questions actually. And I started using Linux. Which I always have the tingle of it. It's been about 10 years now since I started Linux. And I was very driven by this idea behind it of community enabled instead of a business capitalist kind of ideology behind it.
Yeah.
So I was very much into it.
Yeah.
So when I finished my master, I started looking for technology again, but always from this social perspective. Yeah, yeah. So Linux was like the jumping board.
Yeah.
And then I have to select something to study that was kind of on that avenue.
Mm.
And I heard about Bitcoin at that moment. That was 2012, 13.
Yeah.
So it was already there, but still not on a mainstream level. And I thought, well, this will be a great case study, right?
Yeah.
Because it's about decentralizing and making, building a system from a community.
Okay, so you mentioned a word right there that I think is very interesting to also find out what it means to you, because it's a word that is used a lot frequently, but it has a lot of different meanings. So the community's one. I think most people have a similar sense of that one, but decentralized.
Yeah.
What does decentralized mean to you from a more society perspective? As you said, like technology, it's a little bit easier to discern what's decentralized because the average take on what decentralized mean. But societally, what does that mean for you? Is that a power question? Is that a community question? Is that a structural question?
I think it's definitely a structural one in terms of hierarchy, right?
Mm.
So political systems, most historical political systems have been based in strong hierarchies.
Mm.
So yeah, thinking about decentralization hints towards something that is distributed in a different way, but still it's kind of blurry.
Mm.
Because yes, I think it's a word that is used too much. It's like a buzzword. It has currency, but it's rarely defined, in part because it's difficult, right? And I think it's very interesting that you mentioned not technology, but social, because I think a lot of projects tend to mix those two. And you kind of are confused which one they are talking about, right? And it happened, I mean, my research was mainly in Bitcoin during my PhD.
Yeah.
And there was a strong call for decentralization, but most of the time it was meant socially, whatever that meant, but it was enacted technologically. So there was a gap. Yeah, yeah, like I'm missing the word, but a bit of psychotic difference in between those.
A split.
Yes. Yeah. So what I will say is that you don't necessarily have to look on technological advancements to think about some sort of decentralized structures, right? A lot of communities and working environments, not a lot, a few.
They exist.
They exist. And they don't necessarily need a technological medium to exist, right?
And when you mention that, do you mean like co-ops or
yes,
or community-run daycares? Or
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think the co-op is the great example where systems of power are to some degree decentralized, right? In more specific political examples, the Zapatistas in Mexico, is not decentralized per se, it's still like a representational system to some degree, but it makes a lot of, it puts a lot of emphasis on having discussions from the grassroots and finding consensus from the grassroots before, instead of someone deciding.
It's where the masses of power are located in a society or
in
a community or in some cases, technology.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that's a very interesting thing that you mentioned that, because I've felt that a lot myself, actually, where it's been a difficult path to maneuver between the decentralized webs and the blockchain cryptocurrency world, because they'll both use the same terminology of decentralization. I think I've seen recently that distributed systems is a term that's used often in like the decentralized distributed realms more, maybe to differentiate from the only technological aspect that goes with the decentralized term. I don't know, but it was a really interesting thought that I'd never put down so concretely before in my own head.
Yeah.
So thank you.
If I could say a bit more about that, another thing that I think is worth putting on the table is that, and I heard this from a guy called, a researcher called David Columbia, Columbia, a few years ago in a conference, is that there's like an assumption that decentralization is good and better and an improvement. And I believe most of the times it is, but he questioned that. He was like, yes, but why? No, or why are we assuming that that's an improvement, right? Yeah. So I don't have an answer for that, actually, but I think it's important to ask not only how do we decentralize things, but also like, why should we decentralize certain things aren't, and maybe not everything, right?
Yeah. And it's a highly politically subjective perspective, probably too. I imagine that most people who also promote decentralization also promote the more liberal, I guess it's called.
Yeah, of course, there is
of the political compass style.
Yes, a more
libertarian
approach, absolutely. We'll say that. That will also be very much in favor of a kind of decentralization that is not the same as the co-op, right?
No, exactly.
And in that sense, there are cool projects like the Trevor Schultz, he's another researcher that gathers modern cooperative projects. And he calls like platform cooperativism.
Cool.
So it's like, but the emphasis is on the cooperatives and how technology helps them, but not the other way around, right? Yeah.
Cool. Oh, I'm going to ask you about that afterward. So I wanted to bring this back, though, because you mentioned that you found blockchain during 2012 and you started your PhD writing about it. And before we started this conversation, you gave me a tidbit, which was also the term utopia, which you mentioned has been played a big role for you in your writings. Specifically, you mentioned the differences between utopias. Does this also tie into decentralization? Are they weaved together?
I think they are, at least in their ambiguity.
Yeah.
Because
it's thematic.
No, because I mean I haven't worked very publicly
yeah.
on the concept of utopia, but it was a narrative
that was an
argument that was in my PhD dissertation for sure. Part of the narrative was like, and it was applied to Bitcoin, the different meanings of utopia. One as the no place in the sense that a non-physical place or non-existing place, right? Mm. So a lot of ideas about cyberspace that we inherited from the 90s and that kind of state.
They
are still there.
That cyberspace is the no physical
space. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, not even physical, but like a no space. Let's call it like that, right?
Yeah.
So there's that tinge of utopia that comes from before, right?
Yeah.
There is also the idea of a place that is to be achieved.
Mm-hmm.
So something that has to come to be yet. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think decentralization, it's very tied to it, because it's also like something that will happen.
Mm.
And when it happens, things are gonna
be different,
right? But we cannot know.
And if it's completely. Utopia, it'll be different in a good way.
Yes. And there is also the utopia that is not meant to be reachable, right? There's no place that the moment you reach it is no longer the no place, right?
Yeah.
It becomes the place.
Mm.
I know it's a bit cryptic to some degree, but utopia also is something that it's always in the ideal. And remains in the ideal. And I think
it can't really exist in reality, because reality is never a utopia.
Yeah. And that's kind of the use also of it. Not something like negative, right? It's the use of it.
Yeah.
And these three levels,
it's something to aim for.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I think these three levels of different kinds of utopia, you see them in different ways in decentralization driven projects, right?
Mm.
That's the way I use it, at least in my work.
That ties very well into the narratives that are happening with the solarpunk movement as well.
Yeah, but I think it's important to separate which one is which, right? Which one is it works as an ideology in a good sense, and which one is more elusive and more
beautifying in a way.
Beautifying.
Yeah, like creating a utopia image, a utopian image. In the sense that in 1984 they used Peace Institute instead of war.
You know
what I mean? That's like beautifying the world or utopifying.
Yeah,
that's fascinating. And then that also becomes a question of, is it subjective or not? Because then...
Oof, the problem with asking me questions like that is that my background is philosophy.
And you're like,
is it subjective or not? That... I will say that part of the subjective may be an important word here, because it kind of separates, it's not individual, like subject is not necessarily individual, right? Which is the kind of more Silicon Valley, I will say, decentralization oriented idea of individuals that are mediated by technology, and that's a good thing in itself. And I think this the other kind of more complex idea of a subject is a subject that is not an individual, that is a subject in a community, for example, that is made a subject because it's in a community.
Mm.
And there's where you have the co-op more leaned. So when you
different
ask me
kind of
if it's subjective,
I
immediately think of which kind of subject.
Is it a community subject or is it an individual subject?
Yeah.
While we were talking about communities and Silicon Valley, it brought me into something I'm just curious to ask you, actually.
Yeah.
And see your take on, because I've been pondering it in my own head and I have not come to a conclusion yet. The topic is DAOs, Decentralized Autonomous Organizations. And from my perspective, it's been curious because I've heard a lot of people mention DAOs, of course, and tokenization of organizations in order for automating them. And would the subject in this case be for the community or for the individual, so to speak? That's my own thought.
Yeah.
Pattern around DAOs.
Yes.
Have you been thinking about DAOs? Is that like, has that been part of your realm when studying blockchain?
I mean, it's there, of course, because it's a topic that it's around. I haven't written or thought specifically about that, but and I think because it in great part I related it with the Tao kind of attempt and failure from a few years ago, right? But I think tokenization, it's a topic that is closer to what I have been thinking. And one of my issues, actually, with a lot of blockchain projects is that they tokenize. I mean, a lot of the early blockchain designs, they were based on tokenization, right? Yeah. On a production of units that was similar to production of economic units before it. Mm-hmm. So token, I think part of the issue, well, I don't know if it's an issue, but part of what I see as a problem is that tokens are related to economic units, like small units of value that kind of organize the relationship, right? Mm. And in that sense, it lands too close to the economical systems that we already have, right? So for me, the idea of the token is very tied
to pre-existing
economies. That the whole idea is that getting rid of those economies, right? Going beyond those.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's not like I know exactly what will be a good replacement or attempt.
Speaking of good replacements and attempts, are there any projects that you've encountered on your journey that you've been like, wow, they're kind of onto something? You know what I mean?
Yes, but I guess I have to say that not that many.
Yeah. Is it that you have high standards?
Maybe.
Do you need to broaden your radius? No, I'm kidding.
I think my problem was, I mean, I was very invested in the early years, like 2012 to 2016 or 17. And my main problem was that most of the projects will have a very verbose way of presenting the project. And then there will be a replication of other systems, right?
Mm.
Like a lot of alternative currencies, which are not a trendy thing to say. Now you say decentralized apps, but the way they work is not that different, right?
Yeah.
So it's just like a new...
It's a lot of tag words because they use the technology, the blockchain technology, but the system is the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And most of them will phrase their projects in radically different ways, and then you will see that the working it was exactly the same, right?
Yeah.
As other crypto. So I guess it's hard to, we can be very blinded by the amount of projects. If you you see the list of decentralized apps that are there, they're massive, right? But when you go beyond that and start to see like, well, what's the specific difference of this one? You see that there you can cluster them in relatively easy. You can also check like which degree of development they had, and most don't have that much development. So from the massive amount of projects that you can see, it's easy to decimate that number. And then
because of the similarities and because
of
the lack of development.
I will say that it's less the decentralized projects what I have found interesting, and more the looks that go back to the cooperative, and then the technology they use is like the secondary thing, right? And in that sense, I mean, the Decent project was an interesting one that eventually was kind of implemented to some degree in at least in Barcelona or on other communities. That it started like that, right? Like it was part of it was like a cryptocurrency at some point, and but it ended up being to some degree successfully implemented for a different way to relate to governments. But then again, it was because I think tech was a bit secondary, and the main point was like, how do we reorganize this between people for people?
Yeah.
So and that kind of those kind of projects is the ones that you don't see that often. Maybe because they're small, right? And they don't have like venture capital. They don't have like big websites or anything like that. So that's why this idea of platform cooperativism listing is interesting, because you see that it may be a really small project in a small community in Ireland or any other country. And for me, that's a really interesting part
So when we go into, okay, so that's, so if we go into the fact that there's a lot of smaller projects out there in the realms of more social action, and then secondary technology, we have the case in a lot of the mainstream, more default internet, as we know it, that there's also a lot of misinformation going around. Do you think that there could be a point in also having these smaller initiatives of technology? Or do you see that there's a risk in the smaller initiatives existing and then not learning from each other because they're too small? Mm. Or in the space of worldwide webs to local smaller initiatives? How do you fare?
I think I'm more driven to local networks, even though they are a bit disconnected between each other, in great part because there is different ways and things to solve in regions, right? Mm. So kind of having like a magical solution or technology solution or something like, or organizational solution for a really broad spectrum of people, I think that's really complicated, probably destined to not work because of the differences in localisms, right? And coming back to Zapatistas in Mexico, part of their speech is that attempting to replicate them, countries and other contexts, is like, that's a bit absurd, right?
Correct me if I'm wrong. Did they not train in the forest in secret for like 10 years or something? It was like that.
Yeah, it was about 10 years. It was kind of small guerrillas. And I mean, it has a very interesting and long backstory, history. Right? So they came out in 94, but since the 84 or so. But yeah, they it's a really long project, right? Yeah. It's a very interesting project. But yeah, it has 30, 40 years in the working. And it's local. I mean, it's about certain region in certain communities in Mexico. And for that, they made it work in a beautiful and very utopian way. But then again, if you just take like that recipe and try to apply it in Denmark or whichever other region, it's probably not going to work, of course, because it's important to take care of the context. And that's why local communities and local networks, even if not communicated between each other, for me, that's kind of quite relevant.
Especially in today's globalized world where we're getting resources from all over the planet and shipping it all over the planet. That's emitting huge amounts of CO2 all over the planet. It feels like also finding local solutions could be a good key. So we're gonna wrap this up on this lovely note of globalization and Zapatistas. Thank you for a wonderful conversation.
Thank you.
And do you have any last notes you want to throw in there?
No, I'm just glad that these kind of channels exist and that we keep asking questions about these topics, like not just answering, right? Not just trying to offer solutions. There's also like many questions to keep asking before coming with
a concrete, prepackaged, buy it now, 99%. Well, yes. So keep asking questions, and if you want to ask Pablo questions, Pablo will actually be available.
Yes, of course.
To answer questions on EdgeWriter's platform.
Yeah.
That's it for us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sana. It's a pleasure to be here. Ciao.